Our topic tonight is careless hospitality. I was at a meeting sitting around the table with a bunch of foreigners. And as I was sitting there with these foreigners, and just a couple tables over, there were people that I knew, or kind of knew. There was some interesting young couple that I didn't know, but they were from Anabaptist background,
and I really would have liked to talk to them. And I just realized that I wish I wasn't sitting at a table full of foreigners. Like, it just wasn't much fun. We like to be with people that are like us. That is just the way most human beings operate. Now, there's exceptions. Some people are just different, but most of us like to be with people that are very similar to ourselves. How many of you know Ernest Eby from State College? You know who he is? Okay. So he has dedicated his life to serving people that need to be served. And at this point, most of them are foreigners. So he and his family spend most of their social life with foreigners. I admire him for that. I don't know if I could handle it. I just really struggle to enjoy hanging out with people all the time that I don't know. I love hanging out with people. I mean, on our side deck, we light a fire and we have friends over and we have people that we don't know over. And I'm good with people that I don't know, as long as they're from my culture, or at least from my American culture. But when they're just, when they're foreigners, they can, you know, we can hardly communicate, we can hardly speak English. It's tough. In Luke 14, it says, Luke 14, verse 12, it says, "Then he also said to him who invited him, 'When you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just.'" So that's who Jesus wants us to reach out to, is the people that are just uncomfortable to be around with. I know my brother Harold, he has a real heart for people, and he's probably a little bolder at it than I am. And he likes to pick up homeless people and bring them home for lunch. And, you know, people are like, "That's dangerous, you shouldn't do that." Other people in church are like, you know, one of them he brought to church. Well, he usually brings them to church, and he brought one to church, and then they went out and took some stuff out of vehicles. They were out looking through vehicles after or during church. And he got in a little trouble for that, for bringing these people around that were not behaving like they should. But at what point are we willing to be careless in our hospitality? Like, how much are we willing to give up? I want to read another passage. This is also in Luke 10. "And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' And he said to him, 'What is written in the law? What is your reading of it?' So he answered and said, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.' And he said to him, 'You have answered rightly. Do this, and you will live.' But the lawyer, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?'" Sounds like a lawyer question. "Then Jesus answered him and said, 'A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounding him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went out to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring in oil and wine. And he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you." So which of these 3 do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? And he said, "He who showed mercy on him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." There's another parable of Jesus. And in this parable, the hero is somebody that was kind of not very high status, very low status person in the community, the Samaritan. Not the priest, not the Levite. It was a Samaritan. God told the Israelites, "What do I require of you but to do justly and to love mercy?" There's another story of a missionary that a missionary told, and it's a little bit anecdotal, so I'm not sure if it's true or if he made it up, but it's a good story. A missionary and a Buddhist priest were traveling up a mountain. And as they were going up this mountain, it was snowy, it was cold, it was freezing. They had to keep moving to keep from freezing to death. There was a lodge at the top of the mountain that they were going to, and they needed to reach that lodge by nightfall. And as they were walking through the snow, pushing snow, they tripped over a man. And so they stopped and checked out the man. The man was still breathing, but he had badly sprained his ankle, and he wasn't going to be able to walk anywhere. So the missionary and the Buddhist monk, they talked to each other about what should be done, and the Buddhist said, "Well, if they don't keep moving, they're going to die, and then they'll all 3 be dead." And the Christian man said, "We can't leave the man here to die." So the Buddhist said, "Well, do what you want to, but I'm going to go on ahead." So the Buddhist took off to save his own self. The Christian man stayed behind, dug the man out of the snow, got him in a piggyback position, and started hauling him up the mountain. And of course, it slowed him down terribly. It got dark. He could barely see where he was going. It was snowing. It was freezing cold. And finally, he saw the lights of the lodge. Almost there, almost to the lodge. You can see the lights. And they stumbled across somebody in the snow. And it was the Buddhist. It was the Buddhist monk. And by himself, he didn't have enough warmth to keep going up the mountain. He froze to death. But with this extra man on his back and all the extra work that it took the missionary to make that trip, he and the man on his back were saved. They made it there safely. So sometimes what we think is slowing us down is actually what's saving us. Okay. So let's get into the questions. Hopefully we'll have a lively discussion tonight. Feel free to give us your thoughts, your questions. If you have extra questions, if you have questions that aren't on the paper, feel free to share those as well. But the mission question is not primarily a technique, but aliveness, whether the church is actually living the gospel before it asks anyone to listen. On that standard, how alive are we, and what's the honest answer? Do we have that love that we read about in 1 Corinthians, is that what is at our, it's not about technique, it's about how much we care. And I'm probably preaching to the choir, so maybe we should just move on to the next question. Think of the last person outside your community that you spent significant unscheduled time with, not as a project, but as a person. When was that, and what does your answer tell you? Well, it's really hard to separate people from projects. Often we tended to have an agenda for a person more than we just care about them as a person. That's what I think that's... Did you have more thoughts on that? And these are reflective questions. You know, I don't actually expect you to have to come out with too many answers, partly because we as Christian people, we believe in humility, and we're not going to be bragging about who all we were spending time with. Just showing them love. But sometimes these questions can be just a little bit like fasting. You know, we don't tell everybody how much we're fasting. But at the same time, sometimes we just don't tell anybody. Nobody knows, and nobody asks, and nobody does. So some of these reflective questions, I'm not really expecting a lot of answers on that, but I do think we should think about that. Let's go ahead and move on to the third question. Boards and budgets have replaced bread and porches as the preferred tools of evangelism. So what has replaced the porch in your life, and what would it take to get it back? So I think that's something we can talk about. Way easier to send money to Cam, isn't it? So what would you say are the porches? Like obviously our real porches are a little harder to come by, but like what are some porches that we can, what are some places where we can just love people without actually having to do it as a project? Okay, kitchen table. I think we have a real gift that has been handed down to us and our kitchen tables. Food is a wonderful way to bring people together.
On the job, when you work at whatever, you know, take the small moments to care about people.
Okay. Small moments on the job. Yeah, definitely.
One of our biggest problems is we're just too busy.
Okay. We're just too busy.
We just don't have a lot of time just to talk to someone.
Right. Yeah, that's a great place to go. You can always, a lot of times they're very, very willing to tell you about all that stuff. Yeah, with our reliable vehicles, you don't see a whole bunch of guys leaning under the hood of a vehicle anymore. Like you used to see that pretty common way to socialize would be trying to figure out what's wrong with something. Yeah, wow. So somebody stopped and gave them the coffee and donuts that they had bought for themselves, and then somebody else stopped and visited for an hour and a half. So that's a great, I mean, yeah, you have a captive audience. Somebody beside the road, you can, they're not going anywhere. True.
And a friend is that exchange. You give and take. You make yourself vulnerable as well.
Yes. Nobody wants to be a project. Nobody likes being a project. And it's always, everybody wants a friend. But I've heard of people that, you know, they've, once they figured out that they were a project, they just said, forget that. Like, that's not what we want. We want to be friends. Okay, let's move on to the next section. 1 Corinthians 13, and love is a precondition. Paul's love chapter is set inside an argument about spiritual gifts and mission. He's not writing a wedding message. He's saying gifts without love are noise. What spiritual activity in your life might be noise right now? And this is kind of a real oxymoron, isn't it? It's I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Maybe we should just run through that chapter and pick out all the good things that were happening there. Can we just name them? Okay, giving all their good to the poor. Gift of prophecy.
Tithes.
Oh, tongues. True, tongues.
Faith what? That can move mountains.
Faith that can move mountains.
Giving up our bodies.
Giving up our bodies. Wow, to be burned. That sounds like a great list. I mean, if I could speak in tongues and have the gift of prophecy, what else would I need? Okay. You can pick out if a person is a machine or not.
I mean, if you do all those things without marriage, I mean, it basically becomes a machine mentality.
So what kind of love is he talking about? And what is this charity? What does it mean?
Selfless love.
Selfless love? Okay. Start making noise when we're selfish.
Start loving because it's what we have to do. It's the right thing.
No, what was that again?
When we start loving because it's just the right thing. It's what we have to do.
Okay. We start loving because it's the right thing to do.
Because we have to.
Not because we want to or because it's flowing out of us. It's because, that's what he says to do, right? Everybody read this chapter, and that's what it says to do, so that's what we got to do.
I've heard it said once that
obedience without love is legalism. It's really, I find it really hard to tell on myself, like, when am I doing this because I've been trained to do this and because I know this is the right thing to do, and when it's because I actually, I mean, Jesus said, don't do those things because you're doing them with the wrong motive. Change your motive. So it's very tricky to navigate that. Okay, let's go on to the next question. Hospitality in the New Testament sense is a love of the stranger, not just the familiar. Where does your hospitality stop at the edge of your comfort zone, and what would it cost to push past it? So where is the edge of our comfort zone? It'd be really interesting to explore that. Like, where would you draw the line at hospitality? Like, should we start just going down the line and seeing how bad it could get before you would say, no, we're not going to do that? Like, how bad does it have to be before we say no?
Is there a time to shake the dust off your feet?
Okay. Is there a time to shake the dust off your feet? And what are you actually, like, can you unpack that a little bit more?
Trying to think if my wife was with me. I sat the man, I think I was just he and I, through about the longest 2-hour breakfast I ever had. Just attack, anger, just vicious, despising Mennonites and Anabaptism. It was just relentless, and came to a point we just had to end the conversation. And I don't know, something like that is very costly, and there are other people then that you're not able to minister to. Might be said, well, you should schedule that breakfast again the next morning and start it again. I'm just asking the question.
Okay.
There's no agenda.
Yeah, love to hear some thoughts on that. I really think that's a legit question because I think it's true that we do need to draw the line somewhere. Like, I'm not saying we shouldn't draw the line somewhere at all. We do need to draw the line. Sometimes that line is protecting our families. Sometimes that line is protecting others. Sometimes that line is just our own physical and emotional health. Like, if you are with people all the time, you do start to figure out that you do have some, that you do need to set some boundaries. But I guess the question is, where are those boundaries? Like, how far, and they're different for everybody, I think. Like, where should those boundaries be? In your case, I probably would have said, I probably would have listened for 2 hours and then I would have not invited him back. I mean, I'm willing to try at least once, and maybe should be more persistent than that. But I think cost analysis is a great way to think about that as well. Like,
I'm glad you brought that up. I wouldn't have had the nerve to say it. It sounds a little carnal, but if you have opportunities that encourage you and that seem to bear fruit, and you focus on those.
True. Like, I mean, and that's right. If we have opportunities that are, that have potential for fruit, it would be foolish to waste our time with. I mean, God can do things that we don't realize are happening. But there is a cost to everything. And we have to understand what those costs are. And I think like a cost analysis, if you have two people and one person you know is a hardened drug addict that is just hoping to get a little money out of you, and the other one is a person that is genuinely seeking the Lord, then you can't meet with both of them. Like, if you literally can't meet with both of them, you have to choose one. So there is a point where you need to choose. Like, I don't advocate just. I've actually questioned, I'll say this, and you can push back. I've actually questioned the value of spending a lot of effort with people that are very, very addicted. I think sharing the gospel with them is great, sharing some kindness, some love, but to really just go work on those people is probably not the best use of your resources. I mean, if you're just going to go play golf, then sure, do. But if you have other opportunities, maybe focus on people that are in their right mind. And I know that sounds a little harsh to say that, but that's kind of where I'm at. I could, tell me if I'm wrong. True. And I think he's telling us that because he wants us to try everybody once. I mean, I think we literally should. Like, we should try. We shouldn't say, oh, well, that person is, you know, laying in the gutter. He's not worth my time. That's the wrong response. But if you interact with that person and they reject that, then I think you're free to go on. Okay, people generally need to know how much you care before they are open to the gospel. Name one person in your life right now who doesn't yet know how much you care, and what would it take to change that this week? And you can just write that down. You don't actually, I don't want you to say it. And that, what's one habit of hospitality, something regular, not a program, that your household could adopt that would naturally draw people toward the gospel? And what do you think that would look like? I'd love to hear some ideas here. It doesn't have to be your household. It can be my household. That way you take the pressure off of you. something that we've done somewhat accidentally, and I heard this again at Church Planners Forum last week, is we have a trampoline. And trampolines can be vehicles of the gospel. Because the neighbor children all want to come jump on our trampoline. And one time I went out, and I was out in the yard just cleaning up the yard, and I found a Bible out there. And it was all, it had been rained on a couple times, it was all messed up. So I went hunting for somebody that, some irresponsible child that left the Bible in the yard. And I found them, and they said, well, yeah, they admitted they'd left the Bible out there. So I was like, what were you doing with the Bible out? Why did you have a Bible out there? So, well, they were, the neighbor children were over, and they were arguing about creation and evolution. And the neighbor children said, you know, it was the Big Bang and evolution. And the our children said, no, it was creation. God made us. And the neighbor children didn't believe it, so they had to go get the Bible to prove it to them, and then they forgot their play, and they left it out there. So I think a trampoline is a form of hospitality, can be. I mean, there's plenty of others, but it's one way. Any other ideas? Anything you want to share about what we've covered so far? It doesn't have to be on this last question. Just anything on this hospitality subject. We got about 2 minutes left.
Questions of children. I think it can cut both ways. So obviously, I think children are one reason you might not invite certain people in your house.
True.
But I think children can also be somewhat of a door, somewhat of a connector.
Right.
You have more to say on that?
Wow. I have more questions to ask. Can children, and that's true, it cuts both ways. Children can, they can be doors, but you also have to be careful. They also can bring in things that you don't want. So, yeah, we definitely fight that both ways. Our children learn words that they shouldn't be saying. You know, we'll have to, there are things like that happen. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to how much risk are you willing to take? And you need to be wise about the risk. Like, don't just dump your children out there and expect everything's going to be okay. You're going to have to actually keep a ear to the ground and see what's happening. No, I agree that children are probably, I'm going to say children in our world today, that children are our greatest opportunity. Your children are your greatest opportunity for witnessing. If it's just when you go to Walmart and you have 5 children, you ladies, and people are like, whoa, what's going on there? Opportunity to witness right there. Like, opportunities. I mean, just the visual opportunity. Children in stores, you know, responsible, respectful, those things just really stand out in today's world, really stand out. So don't be afraid to take your children out in public and, don't go show off, because they'll definitely embarrass you, but you can feel free to use them as a way to help expand that porch a little bit. Thank you for your thoughts.